they thought it was part of the show. And
he flies and then he dies, right?
Yeah, that's it. That's it. It's like, you know.
Welcome back to another episode of the Making Magic podcast. I'm Sean Jay, your host, and I'm a professional magician, speaker, and 3D designer. And this is all about inspiring interviews with the movers, the shakers, the visionaries, and the makers, the wizards behind the curtain that make the magic for you. Now, if this is your first time tuning into the show, thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to watch this stuff. It really does mean a lot to me because this is a labor of love and a project of passion. So if you haven't already, feel free to click that red subscribe button down below. Go ahead, I'll give you a second. Have you done it? Yes, I think you have. Give this video a thumbs up, turn on the notifications to stay up to date when I release the next episode. Perhaps you're already a subscriber, and if you are, if you've been following me along this journey, I do certainly appreciate that because that is exactly what motivates me to continue doing these and continue to bring you these educational, entertaining, and inspiring interviews with just the best of the best in their own industry. So perhaps you're also listening to the sound of my voice on an app like Spotify, or just recently got listed on an app, the Apple Podcast app, the purple app that you find on your phone, your watch, or your iPad. Yes, you can find the show there. Just type in Making Magic with Sean Jay, S-H-A-U-N-J-A-Y, and you'll find the show. Or you could just type in my name, spelled that way, and you'll find the show. And hopefully, after listening, you'll decide to give this show a healthy 5-star review. I always enjoy seeing your feedback and reading your comments. So with all that being said, let's learn a little bit more about our next guest. He's the recipient of several international awards for his work. First place in Italy in 2001, and third place in France in 2002. And he achieved public recognition in France in 2006 with his show, The Shadow Orchestra, which he performed in Paris and worldwide more than 1,000 times. He's both the creator and performer of visual magic that he presents internationally. And he composes the music for his own show and the shows of others with his friend Maxime Rodriguez. And in 2012, he created the character Sneaky for the Cirque du Soleil show Michael Jackson 1 on the Las Vegas Strip. And his recent unique social media videos have garnered millions of views, and he's currently starring in his own show at Bally's called Xavier Mortimer's Magical Dream. And he has way more credits and accomplishments than I just listed here, and you'll find out a lot more about these in the interview that's about to start in just a second. So please welcome France's finest, now living and performing in Las Vegas, Xavier Mortimer. All right, we got Xavier Mortimer. Hey, Xavier, welcome to the show. Welcome to Making Magic. Thank you so much.
Hi, Sean. Thanks for having me.
Yes, this is going to be good. This is going to be really great. I know my viewers and listeners are really going to enjoy this. This is going to be a fun chat. So I always like to open the show, Making Magic, with a story. And I'd like you to tell us all a story about the very first thing that you made or created. This could be a prop or a piece of yours, and funny stories are always welcome. It could be really good or it could be really bad, whatever you choose.
I had this project when I was like a student to do this show with my shadow and stuff, because I'm a musician and I decided to mix magic and music. And one day I go see this concert, and there's these two guys on stage playing music, and I'm like, I don't know why I had this vision of like, there was their shadow behind them just because it was lighting, you know, it was not like a special effect or something. And I had this vision of like, oh, what if the shadow was playing another instrument with the guy? That would be so funny. So I write this thing and I applied for like grants and stuff because I was a student and I didn't have any money. I get my grant and I decide to go see a friend in Russia who had like a studio, big studio, and to help me build these shadows, because we had to film the shadows and then we had to project the shadows behind me so the shadow could work with me. It was more like...
Yes, that is an amazing piece, by the way. For those who haven't seen it, I could put a link in the description of this video. You guys need to check out the Shadow Orchestra. That's where we're going.
Yeah, that's what we called it, the Shadow Orchestra.
Continue.
And it was it was also a little bit of George Méliès when he was splitting his head and having other instruments on chairs. There's a lot of influence on that act. George Méliès. It's the first magician who actually created a lot of the first camera tricks. George Méliès is very famous for that. The first camera tricks, everything that you see like today in the contemporary movie production in camera tricks has been created by a magician, a French magician who was named George Méliès. He was kind of the Zach King of the 1920s.
okay.
We have those shadows dancing with me, and at some point the guy was like, We decided to do like a very strong dance, like very with a lot of beats. I say, hey, that would be funny if your shadows were flying around and spinning. I'm like, wait a minute. And this is this kind of moment where like you stop everything and you say, I've got a great idea now, and this is going to be, and this has made most of my, this has launched my career. This idea that came here at this moment with someone who has no knowledge of magic, is just a creator, and say, oh, that would be funny if you dance and your shadow fly. I'm like, wait a minute, if my shadow fly, I can fly too. Let's try it. And then I do some research and I see what can I do in front of a white curtain? How can I do it? There's this that exists and this and this and this. And I found out that spinning, could be a fun thing, mostly first shadow spins, second shadow, and then you spin and everyone spins.
It's so good. And it looks so good.
Yeah, it's such a silly idea. It makes something different and original. And this is this kind of moment. And also, I'm so glad I had to work with someone who has no idea of magic. He just said, hey, that'd be funny if that was playing. And then me, with my background and everything that I know about magic, I was like, yeah, like we have something amazing here. And then I launched this act, and that basically is what made me my career for my first 10 years.
That is fantastic. And it drives home the importance. And some of the other people that I've interviewed, they mentioned the same thing, the value of getting input from someone who has nothing to do with your industry. So,
yes,
you know, because we talk about people getting, like magicians, for instance, we learn our tools, you know, we know the moves and we know what already exists.
Yeah.
And we think that that's all that we can draw from, that toolbox. But
yes,
then when you get outside input from a non-magician, or if you're an engineer, a non-engineer or whatever, sometimes they will suggest the best ideas, because they're the craziest, most far-fetched ones you'd never even think of.
Yeah, I remember I had one day I was in a theater, and there was a guy who was just a cleaning guy, you know, from the theater, who gave me an idea that was amazing, you know, and it made me change, because he just had a point of view of someone who's just passing by and looking at the things. And I was like, yeah, just tell me the idea. So I think every person can have an idea, and everyone can have like an input. Of course, you're not gonna take it all, because some people are, people are giving ideas that are like just too much or not related. But sometimes, you know, where it crosses, and you can't miss that idea. You can't miss that moment where two things cross together and you're like, wow, that can make something amazing.
Yeah, and I had a friend who did that quite frequently. We would be, she would ask me, what are you working on? And I would tell her, and then she would always say, well, you know, if you were a real magician, wouldn't it be cool if you could do X, Y, and Z? And it's like, why didn't I think of that? Well, because I'm just thinking in my little box here, where I think I know everything in this little box, and they are so far removed. They're just bringing a whole other viewpoint. So, and look at that one person. You said it was the cleaning guy at this place.
There's many ideas. The guy with who I made the shadow thing was, the shadow was my idea, but the idea of the spin and everything was a guy who was into art and cinema and stuff like this. So he had no idea, and that was great. Many ideas actually that are performed today, the best are come from movies and paintings, and you know, that's,
yes,
we haven't invented everything. Everything was here before. A lot of clown stuff too, you know, like clown guys can be turned into a magic trick sometimes.
Yes. And when viewers research your show and they look up Xavier Mortimer and they can see your promo video, they'll see the influence of clown and mime and magic and juggling too, as well, because you've got all that going for you. All of that. And what was there a specific reason why you made that piece, or was it just an accidental discovery? Did you have a clear vision for the piece? I guess that's what I mean.
It's the same. I think when you have when something clicks, it always like, it's like when you fish, you know you've got something, but you have to get out of the water. So I had this idea, I had this thing, and I knew I should hold on to it. I knew there was something I should dig, and but it took me like 5 years maybe to get like to something interesting. I started in 2003 my project, and I think the first time I went on the cabaret was 2007. So it was 3-4 years before I could really get something interesting.
So it was just you were watching something with shadows, and then you had this idea pop into your head, and then you just thought, this is something worth pursuing, and then you just kept chipping away at it for the next 5 years, basically.
It was not that long. It was like after the first concept was like already people were looking at it and say, that's something great that you have, keep working on it. And then it took me like that many years to perfect it. And I remember my best years of touring were like 5 or 6 years after, because the show was really strong and tight, and all I could like cut and put back. I changed my shadows. I changed the pace of the show like maybe 10,000 times. It's just and I felt it was really good after 5 or 6 years. That's what it took.
So probably every show you did, you look back and you're like, oh yeah, right at that moment I could have tweaked it just a hair there, a little there, and then after 5 years, those thousands of tweaks add up, and then I got a whole new show 5 years later.
Yeah, we recorded the show on DVD in 2009, and it was already a good piece, you know, it was already pretty strong, but today I can't even watch it. I'm like, no, I changed. No, this is different. This is better now. This is better.
Yeah, that's usually how it is with our old work. We think it's so good in that moment, and then you wait 5-10 years later and you go, oh man, I was doing that crap. Oh my, what was I thinking? Right? Not that your original thing was crap. I'm just saying, compared in your mind, probably compared to what it is now, it was just so inferior before.
Yeah, it's inferior. I don't know. It's different. I think there's a moment for everything. You also attract the audience that you, a different audience. Like, for example, I know that with my old show, I will not attract the same audience that I'm attracting right now on social media or when I do my Vegas show. It's different type of audience. If you want something artsy, you're going to attract a certain type of audience. If you do something very like flashy and stuff, you're going to have different people. You always have to be clear with what you want and what you do, but there's no bad magic. There's no bad ideas. There's no like, yes, I'm ashamed. I mean, ashamed. I'm like, no, don't watch. But I learned with my experience to not say that, like, this is what I did 10 years ago. Enjoy it. Have fun.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It was me 10 years ago. I'm different now.
Yeah. You're a different person. Understood. Got it. Okay. And what specifically did you learn from making that piece? Perhaps something that you learned about yourself, something that you learned about your art, or maybe...
Well, a lot. I learned a lot. Like, I started that piece, I was a student, as I said. I came from a different world. I came from I was studying to be a mountain guide, like, you know, showing nature to people. And I was a magician, but I just liked it. You know, I was just like circus, magic, juggling, all these things I was practicing in my downtime. And I have this idea. I get the money for it. I start working on it. And suddenly I realized, but, you know, I don't look good on stage. I don't look good on camera. I don't. So, okay, go get some dance class. Go get some acting class. And this is when I went back to dance and music and acting school, because I couldn't watch myself on camera. I couldn't, I'm like, ah. So I learned a lot. And that project made me learn like everything, all the acting, everything that I know today is because of that project. Because I had this idea and I had to pursue it. And I had to go until I think it's actually presentable and it's actually good to my standards. So I went to school. I literally like, I was in school in the morning in Paris, and I was working at night doing my gigs. And during the afternoon, I was building my show. It was just insane, but very exciting.
Wow. So quite, yeah. I mean, like you said, the Shadow Orchestra literally built your modern career. It built your, it just upgraded everything about you as a person and your skill set, because in order to accomplish what you really wanted, you had to learn all of those things and fill in all those gaps in order to make that piece exactly what you wanted.
You never really know, and mostly in magic, I believe, like, I think it's right for every kind of art. Like, if you're an actor, you have to learn the characters, you know, like, you have to really dig into, you have to make some research. And magic is kind of the same. You have to, like, I'm working on a new illusion, let's say the Impel illusion. Who created the Impel illusion? Okay, great. What has been done? How can I do it different, better? What's my idea? Okay, so yeah, now you gather all this information and you learn about, I don't know how the name of it, the propulsion, and how to make something go down and how to make something go up, but I'm not going to reveal how it's done, but right. You have to learn all the technique for that. You have to learn everything. And sometimes I call stores and I would never have like even imagined in my entire life have called these stores to ask for that specific item, because it's something that I ignored existed. I remember when I created my jump rope act, this is after the Shadows. I think the jump rope was like my biggest like crazy idea. One day I just wake up and in a semi fog, I'm like, I see this image of this guy like jumping with a rope and flying away. And I was like, wow, that's a cool thing. That's poetic. That's fun. And also as a magician, it's great because you are literally creating something justified to show that there's no attachment, that you're flying. Mm. And I'm asking around. I said, do you think it's a good idea? Yeah. You should try it. Okay, cool. And I had no idea how to do it. I literally came from like zero and okay, spin a jump rope around you while flying, what are you gonna do? And I put some ideas together. I touched things and I tried in my backyard, in the park, everything. And I come up with the solution and it's great, but I have this solution, but I have only half of it because the technique, I have to learn how to take the whole technique. And I know absolutely nothing about flying because at the time I was more a close-up guy. I was more like doing smaller stuff with magic, and I have no idea how a flying works, how rig works, all these things, you know? Yeah. So I got to see, I was working in Cirque du Soleil. I go see the guys from Cirque du Soleil. I go see people who know about magic, and I all gather all this information and I call people from, you know, the other side of the country, even in Europe, and I gather all the information. I learned so much, like so much. You can ask me about anything about all this, and I would give you all the measurement, the size, and everything that you can know about a person fly. But I knew nothing, and I had to learn it from zero. And that's the beauty of it. It's the path that you take to create your thing. That's like I've learned so much with this.
Yeah, just with that one project alone, just the amount of insane amount of research. It seems like every, I mean, because I've personally seen your show, And you know that. And I would see it many, many, many times again, because I would think every piece in your show is like that, because every piece is just so whimsical and so creative, and it's just really out there. It's pretty obvious that you research to the nth degree whatever you're working on, and you really put a lot of effort into making it look good, great. Not good, but great. So, big. I'm a big fan here. Anybody who I tell about magic in Las Vegas and what to see in Las Vegas, I always tell them, Xavier Mortimer's Magical Dream, it's the best kept secret in Las Vegas. Please go see it. I tell everybody. So,
but I hope it's not kept secret for too long.
Well, right. I know. I'm trying to help it not be a secret. We need
Thank
more
you.
People.
I appreciate it.
So after all of this experience, and how long have you been doing magic? I know that's a standard question, but this will help me reference.
Well, I would say 25 years now, something.
Wow.
Or a
okay.
little more, maybe 27, almost 30 years, yeah.
So almost 30 years in the business, doing the...
Oh, no, not in the business. I've been in the business for 20 years.
Oh, only 20. Well, still 20 years in the business, 30 years practicing and learning and researching. You definitely know a lot more than when you were that 12-year-old boy. So
yeah.
Knowing.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes, you know, it's fun because it might be a cliche, but sometimes I think about it. Sometimes I look at myself. I was selling flowers on the market in a small village in the south of France. I'm like, can you imagine if someone came to see you while you were selling those flowers on the market, saying, you know, one day you will have your show in Las Vegas. What is Las Vegas? Where is Las Vegas? America? What? You see what I mean? Like, I would not believe it. I would be like, what is that? It's a different life. It's a different me. It's something. And I wouldn't expect that. That's crazy. And all the path and all the up and downs, like there's so many moments I would have thought that my career would end. I was working with the Cirque du Soleil, and the creation was intense, really intense, because you have to review and review and review until they like it and until it's perfect, because it's a big show and they can't take a risk. And I had to like move and cut and things that I really liked, and they said no, you cut this, you keep that, you cut this, you keep that. And at some point I thought I would blow up, and I said, you know what, I might take a plane back to France because I'm not feeling comfortable. And I held on to that. And same thing for every show, for the show in Vegas, for my shadow orchestra, I almost didn't open it because I thought it was stupid to do that. I thought I was crazy. The spin thing was like, we do it blindly, you know, and it took me a while to get like really into it. And I fell a couple of times, and I was like, you're going to die before you know, I fell from the jump rope too. And I knocked myself out before the end of the show. And I was like, yeah, I'm not going to do that anymore. This is over. This I'm too crazy. This I shouldn't play with my life like that. So all of this has built like who I am now, and that's amazing to see the path that you have to take to fulfill your dreams. Yeah,
an insane and very fulfilling but stressful and filled with ups and downs. I mean, knowing what you know right now, Xavier, is there anything that you wish you would have told your younger self? Making the mistakes. They're the younger man in the mirror, right?
Yeah. No, it's funny because you can't change anything, actually. You can't,
right.
Like, you know exactly why you were thinking that at that time. The only thing is like, I would say, but I didn't have that. I would say like, don't give up. Don't be negative. Don't like say that you're not capable of, but I always wanted to move on. And that's why I'm here now. Maybe even if I always doubted me, I'm still doubting myself. but there's nothing you can change. And I think you have to grow up by yourself. It's like, you know, it's like a good wine. You have to just age. And you're going to be good.
Like a good French wine.
Yeah, right.
Aging gracefully. That's Xavier Mortimer's new piece. Aging gracefully, like French wine.
Yes.
Can you tell us about something that you recently made without, of course, revealing any secrets, maybe just the effect or the concept, something that you recently built or an effect that you're proud of and happy to share with the world?
We're working on a project right now. There's actually many projects. I've been producing magic for social media recently, so that was my main. Yeah, that was my main. Because I mean, we were at home and we're like, okay, it's illegal to perform now, so let's do something with our lives. And I just went out and we started to build things, and we were at home and doing some stunts and big illusions at home. That was fun. That was a very fun year for us, because I mean, it was not a fun year, of course, because
right,
everything that was happening in the world. But same thing, you know, we just went for it. I worked a lot with Joaquin Ayala, who's basically behind everything that we're doing right now.
He's building the concept.
The card, for example, is a great piece that we've been coming up together. I came up to the shop today and I said, hey, I showed him like a little drawing on a what do you call that, like a piece of paper, you know. And it was just a card, and it was a guy flying behind the card like Superman, you know. And he looks at it, I say, can you make that? And he looks at it and said, yeah, sure. Come back in a few days. Can you get some cards from me? We go get some cards on the parking lot. We went back home. And
he basically stole some cards from the shopping lot.
I mean, how do you buy a card? Do you go on Amazon?
You borrowed them for the project.
We borrowed them for the project. Can you? You can't buy a card on Amazon. So
no,
you
I
have
know.
To
I'm
cards.
Just I'm just teasing you. But basically,
let's say
you had
we found them abandoned in the park.
Of course, they were just sitting there. Nobody, just all by their lonesome.
But I think we did something good for humanity. We created a fun piece of art, and
I think
believe
so.
It was worth. So I come back and he puts me on the cart and I fall, and he say, okay, come back in 2 days. And I come back and I fall again. He say, okay, come back in 2 days. I come back and I don't fall, but almost. And then he say, okay, come back in 2 days and pick it up. I won't have time, so but just pick it up. Okay. I just bring the thing home and I go on the cart and I'm like, I'm gonna go, is it gonna work? Like until the last minute. And I had my phone on a tripod right here, and I go on this thing and I hold and I'm flying like Superman behind this card, and this card starts to like move. And I go down and I watch the tape and I was like, this is the best thing that I've done this year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
And we go and we film the whole thing, which is another process, because it's not like just you have the illusion. You have to like build the video so it's interesting, entertaining. You know, you know what it is. You know, you can't just show up on the camera and say, hey, I've got a coin, it's disappeared. No one wants to see that.
Nobody
really
cares.
Nobody cares for that. They want stories. They want relatability. People want something. And that's why we went to the store with the cart. And we didn't ask, because I was like, they're gonna see us, they're gonna tell us to get out. And we went like shopping like Superman in the thing, and I really thought that the employees would like kick us out. And we stayed and everyone was so happy to see that, and we got the reaction from the people, and we went all around the stores, and even at the end people are like, what the heck, what just happened? That was so funny. There was people thanking us for being here, and I really thought we would have been like kicked out. And that was really fun, you know. You don't know until the end. And the first time I fell, the second time I fell, and I fell again, and I fell, and Joaquin he knew we could make it, but I didn't know. And I was like, do you think it's gonna work, Joaquin? Are we wasting our time? Are we wasting our money? And it's, you know, we're paying for these things that we're buying and stuff.
These prototypes are very expensive.
Oh, you cannot imagine how much money sometimes we pour, and well, this thing doesn't really work. But this one ended up working and be a great idea. And I was like, wow, that's so fulfilling that you discovered that after all this research, you have something that's finally like interesting.
And it looks like what your effect is going for. It looks like you're just flying horizontally, pushing a shopping cart while you're flying. That is the effect. And I love the effect too, because people, it's so simple to understand, meaning people don't need to think in order to grasp what's going on. They look, they go, oh, there's a guy flying, pushing a cart in the store. It's nothing.
and it came actually from a stupid thing. I saw that there was a guy on TikTok playing on a cart. And suddenly it reminds me, like, you know, when you're a kid, like you jump on the cart and you hold like this, mm-hmm. and you go, I was like, damn, this is such a, everyone wants to do that. This is, to me, these kind of ideas, you touch something because it's like a fantasy that everyone would have. Like, oh, I wish I could fly to the moon with a bike. You know, like E.T., this image is so strong, you know, yes. Like I wish I could fly behind a cart. And when you create that kind of image, that's when magic is exciting, I believe.
Yes. And you're basically touching on stuff that Copperfield talked about. I remember I heard him give a talk, and people were asking him, how do you create your magic? And his answer was pretty simple. He said, I like to create what I call aspirational magic, creating pieces off of ideas and dreams that people, the public, humans aspire to do, aspire to be. Like you said, you know, if I was a kid and when I grow up, I want to do this, you know, I want to fly on a jump rope at the playground, you know, and impress my girlfriend. Thus, that became part of your story.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's magic that actually makes sense. I've always tackled magic in this way. And that's why also I'm really fond of David's work, because everything has to be justified. Like, what about making a card disappear? This is great and this is entertaining and I love magic and I'm actually a big fan of card tricks, but to me, the magic that touches me the most is, for example, when you see, when they did Cyril did the hamburger in the street, you know.
Cyril, Cyril Takayama, yes.
So you go in the street and you say, oh, I'm gonna eat the hamburger, and you get the Perfect. Hamburger. And sometimes, you know, it's funny because there's something interesting about it is that sometimes this is not the most fooling magic. Sometimes this kind of magic, you kind of like, yeah, you could understand kind of how it works, but even if it's difficult to understand for like the regular people, but it's not the most fooling. I've been fooled by card tricks, like really like fooled, like I have no idea. But this kind of magic, you always have a little idea on how it could work. But this is so beautiful. This is so something that you could dream of. This is so something that you would, I want, when I do my magic, I want the people who came to my show, the people who saw my video, I want them to see the broom and they're sweeping at their house. And at some point, like, damn, remember what that guy did with that broom? You see what I mean?
It's very important to think that way, because you're touching people on a much deeper level.
Yeah, and this is like what I call relatability. This is what I said when I said relatability. Look at that lamp. This guy made that lamp float. I have a lamp at home, and I'm sure the guy is with his kid, with his family, or the lady, or anyone, and be like, oh, look, and they try to mimic, you know, the magician doing his stuff, and that's when it comes. You've opened their mind to another. Like something that this is the real impossible to me. This is the real impossible. Making a card disappear, we can all imagine that a card is gonna disappear, but who's going to imagine that a guy fly with a jump rope? And this is where, you know, I'm looking for my ideas. I'm fishing for the ideas in that corner here.
Yeah.
It's a difficult corner. It's lots of waves.
It's a very, very vast and deep ocean that you're fishing in that can take a very long time to catch that next fish. But it's so much worth it, right? It's so worth it when you do.
Yeah. And it's also who we are as magicians, you know, who, again, I've seen people like really blowing my mind with simple stuff. And I love magic as a whole. Like I'm devouring books and DVDs and stuff. And I love everything about magic, but this is who I am. This is the magic that I want to create. Yeah.
That's great. That is awesome. So you touched on, you know, having people help you like Joaquin Ayala and probably other people that have built concepts that you've created in your head. I'm pretty sure that you yourself, before you met Joaquin and probably when you were younger and didn't have as much money, you were forced into a situation where you had to learn some building techniques and build your own stuff. So are there any, like nowadays they call them maker techniques, like maker space. Are there any that you would say that you're good at more so than the other, like woodworking, for instance, or electronics?
Yeah, woodworking. I built my first fly cases. Yeah, built them myself. They're so bad, but I built them.
Which case?
Painted them. Rod cases. My first rod cases.
Oh, your rod cases. Okay.
Yeah. No, I did everything. I did everything. I literally have. I learned how to sew. I learned how to woodwork. I learned how to weld, but I wouldn't weld for myself because I'm not good at it. I learned basically. So this is how I create, because I know all these techniques and I have a place where I can work and I have everything that I need. I do it, but bad. It's the same way that I make music. When I make music, it's like I've got this great idea of this song and this thing. And then I give it to a friend of mine who's like a real musician, you know, someone who knows how to edit and do all the process, you know. And I say, make it look good. And that's basically the idea with a lot of things that I do. Even though with Joaquin, we work a little different. I basically come with a drawing and I say, hey, what would you do? And I gave up on like even doing prototypes with him because he knows so much. But I used to have cardboard boxes and do all the things, painting. I used to build my own props, but I don't like to do it anymore because I think it's at some point it's a waste of time. You have to hire the right people to do the right things. Even it's great and it's fulfilling to build your own thing. And I have so many things that I think I even made my costumes when I was a kid. But, wow. You know, it's like too much. I didn't make them. I designed my own costumes. And I think it's like you're going too far. Like
it takes up so much time to create your own stuff from scratch and actually be the person making it.
Yes. And I used electronics too. I used to solder the electronics that I used to use, you know, instead of buying a remote from Amazon. That's stupid, but I think it was the intellectual process of trying to make something by yourself, but I gave up pretty soon when I discovered that people were much better than me at it.
I'm surprised, but at the same time, I'm not surprised because I thought, yeah, no, I get it now because you seem to be the kind of guy that really enjoys just having your concepts come to life, and you probably want them to come to life as quickly as possible. And if you were to do the thing from scratch and build everything with your own hands, it might take 10 times longer and it might not be exactly what you want. Whereas if you have that perfect concept, you can give it to somebody that you know is going to just going to rock it out and give you what you need. And then you can
go
from there. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's not like I'm not ordering a trick. Really like when I, like you said, and I think the sense of your question, because I've been building so much things. I've been building like my entire show, The Shadow Orchestra. I built it myself. Even the white curtain that is on stage, that where the projection is, I saw it myself.
Thought so. I mean, I knew you did. Yeah.
Yeah. So I did that. I did that. But this time where I was doing everything is behind me now. This past, I would say 5 to 6 years, 7 years, maybe, I started to realize that there's much better people than me out there. And instead of redoing, resewing something 7 times because it's wearing out, because you didn't do it right, mm-hmm. because you're doing 250 shows a year, mm-hmm. have someone like do it like really properly and strong, and you're never going to touch it again. But for that, you have to know, you like, I never go to see someone and say, hey, do me this. No. I know what is possible and what's not possible. Like, I remember when I wrote music for instruments, you have to know that a cello, for example, doesn't go under a certain note. So you won't write a note that is too low for a cello or a violin or something, you know? And it's the same for when you do a magic trick. When you do a magic trick, you know where to go because you know what's possible, what's not possible. You're not going to ask that if technically the engineering doesn't work. And I'm not stupid. So because I had my sleeves up and I know how to build that. So I build things. And then I say, hey, this is what I built. Can you make it better?
Got it. Yeah, you have this concept and you learned enough about these certain building techniques to just get your working concept, and then you take that working concept and then you give it to somebody who can make an even more streamlined version, right?
Yeah, exactly. And mm-hmm. and it releases a lot to me as a performer. Even when I was talking about welding, you know, when I used to weld when I was younger, and I stopped welding as soon as I started to do things that would support my weight because I didn't trust myself enough for that. You see what I mean? I'm like, no, I'm not going to weld and rotate upside down, you know? I'm going to let someone who knows his job.
Yeah, you better have a good weld joint there.
Yeah. And now I trust the people who are welding for me. I know that I can go up on the thing. I don't even think about it. I don't even think, did I weld it right? Did I let it dry enough? You know, I'm just going because this is what they do. And then I have my head for the presentation, how I'm gonna put it together, how I'm gonna perform at night, because you know you have to perform at night, and you know all these things. It's a tough job.
I know how tough it is. I know your average audience member has no clue.
Yeah.
The insane amount of work that goes behind what you do. You know, I tell people this. I mean, this isn't my own theory. This is just common knowledge in the industry. But the show itself, as you know, that's just the top part of the iceberg sticking out of the water.
Yeah.
That's what people see. That's the show. People would always, my mentors would always tell me, the show is like your reward for doing all that other crap that nobody sees behind the scenes, all that hard work. Then you get to, your reward is you get to play on stage.
Exactly. Yeah. I think this is the case. We actually built this whole thing, and the more it goes, the more I realize it. Like, we're reopening the show in a few months now, so I'm building
Great.
Something, and I'm realizing that I have to work harder now. I'm working smarter. Instead of doing everything myself, I'm going to have people do that on backstage for me before the show, and then I get my reward, which is performing. Which I didn't think that way before. I used to like do everything, and I used to be like 3 hours before the show, 4 hours before the show, and I was like do all my little things. And I think it's important at some point to like just you do it, and then you keep creative, because if you're not creative enough, if you don't have people who are loading the stuff for you or doing this work, or if you're traveling all the time, mm-hmm. then when are you going to continue creating? You know, you have to, the space for me, the space for me has to be like, from this was creativity, this was performance. I want to have this creativity and now this performance. Performance is just the little thing at night, the interruption of my day. And I'm smiling and I'm happy to be in front of the audience. And I give give people a good time for an hour and a half.
Yes.
Change something interesting. And then I keep creating magic and building the art of magic. You know, it's very important to me.
Yes, the importance of delegation, delegating the people to pick up those skills or tasks that you used to do, but you don't want to spend all your time on anymore, and that'll free up your time to be more creative.
Yeah, that's the idea. We'll see how it goes. You know,
right?
You never know.
Right.
You never know. But I believe at the end of the day, we're craftsmen. You know, when you're a magician, you can't avoid that. You're gonna have your sleeves rolled up anyways, so.
Right. Because, well, you really have a passion for it. It's obvious that you have a passion for what you do, and it's not like you're doing it just to do it. You're doing what you do, and you're getting so involved in it because you genuinely care about the outcome, you know?
Yeah.
Each thing is like your baby. You want to see it come to life.
Yeah. I'm realizing the more I grow, that this is really something that I care for. I care for magic a lot. I care for bringing something different, making a difference. Yeah, making a difference. I think it's very important. Because I could have done many other things. You know, throughout your lives, you have other opportunities that open and mm-hmm. things. And I always chose, even in hard times, to like keep doing what I was doing. So it might be something, yeah.
Definitely,
I'm completely stupid, or I'm just very passionate. Yeah,
maybe a little of both. Who knows? I can tell you. Yeah. I can tell you though, it does make a difference, and it's pretty obvious when people see your show. They go, "Oh, this guy didn't just walk into a store and buy this stuff. He really put some thought into it." I mean, you have a professional director for your show, correct?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it's clearly a very different experience, which I like because I see a lot of magic, and I would assume Vegas audiences see a lot of magic because it's just so saturated with magic, and being different, I think, is really important, especially when you have a show in Vegas. And
Yeah.
I mean, you know, people are walking down the strip and they go in a. Lots of times they don't go to see a show just because they wanted to see just that show. They're just trying to cool off, you know? So it's kind of like, how can...
That is true. Yeah, that right? is true. Yeah. But, you know, we keep some people who have opened the way and showed me the way in that sense probably are Penn and Teller and David Copperfield, because they kept doing something original, different,
yes.
and... still they're having their show in Vegas, so why not? I know there's other performers who are doing more standard stuff, but there's for every taste, and because right. they've been able to keep a show in Vegas with the original material, I think this is possible, and I'm willing to play the game this way.
Yes, you're playing it very well. You're playing it in spades. Are there any maker techniques that help you create things? I know you said you're not doing as much of the hands-on building as you used to, but are there any techniques in the maker space that you're interested in learning this year? Like any new techniques?
Maker? What do you mean?
So I guess just the modern English vernacular today, it's makerspace, makers are just people that build their own stuff by using techniques like woodworking, electronics, plastic, metal working. So are there any techniques like that you are perhaps planning on learning this year? Or do you just prefer to just do all the concept work and just delegate all that stuff out?
No, it has evolved. I'm learning a lot of filmmaking right now, like camera work and stuff. I'm working how the camera work. I mean, you know, they told us to stay at home, so
yeah.
I had to learn a different way to perform my magic. So I've bought a bunch of cameras and I'm learning. I want to keep creating content online. I think it's a great way to show magic, even if the show reopens. That's basically what I'm into. But no, other than that, I keep learning tricks. Recently I've been more into like stunts, like real, like, you know, difficult things with your body, you know, like freezing temperatures or things like that. Yeah, real like stunts. Endurance stunts, yeah. I've been very interested in endurance stunts. I will see, you know, there's so many things to do. I don't know if I'm going to do something with that or not.
Right.
I've done a couple of difficult ones, like walking on the pole. The light pole was pretty intense.
It looks intense.
Yeah, no, it's my back was really hurt. But this is, I like this kind of... like physical things. Yeah, that's what I've been learning, camera stuff and stunts. And I will keep running all my life. I think there's always something you can learn. If it's what about learning card magic at some point? What about learning mentalism? Or there's so many things, you know. It's infinite. You can always learn something.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And it's smart to always be learning. I mean, a lot of people they get stuck in a pattern and they're content with that. And you know, the problem with that is you go see their show or whatever their work is 10 years, 15 years later, and it's the same exact thing that you saw 10, 15 years ago without a change. And it's kind of like, I know people that do stuff like that, and I just think to myself, well, I guess, you know, hey, maybe if they're making money with it, if they found a formula that works, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
But I mean...
Yeah, no, I think it's actually, that's the goal. That's to make money with what you do. And that's why I think I'm really like stupid or crazy, but because I noticed something, like every time I had a project that was actually working and making money, I just stopped. I was like, okay, it's done.
Because there was no creative challenge for you anymore, right?
Exactly. I think it's more about like, okay, I've done it now. I proved that I could make. I proved that I could work a big illusion. Okay, I proved that myself that I could do a close-up routine. I proved myself that I could have a viral video on internet. I proved myself that I could, yeah. I don't know, surf, you know, all these things. And as soon as they start working, I lose interest really quickly.
That's the inner creative soul. That's the
plight
of the artist. You are definitely a true artist, and it just comes out in your work. And I'm the same way, you know. I get bored very easily with whatever. And once you say, oh, I could do it, okay, on to the next thing. But no, you just found a perfect piece that you need to keep in your show. Leave it. It's good. I get it. No, I get it. What about the, is there a favorite thing that you have designed in the past? Would you say it's the Shadow Orchestra, or would there be anything else that you would?
Yeah, no, the Shadow's been pretty far. I mean, I've been, I've changed versions so many times that this is, you know, it becomes like, okay, now there's not a single inch that is left I can tour. It's packed small. It's the rhythm is perfect. I cut everything that was not working in the act. I mean, everything, you know, I'm trying to reach to every trick. It takes so much time, but I'm trying to really reach like a point where I will never be 100% happy, but like, I think it's very strong, you know?
It's a well-oiled machine, as they say. Got it down to a science, and I could tell that you have it down to a science because I've seen so many different performances of it, you know, within a fairly recent time, meaning I think like the Next Great Magician you did.
Oh yeah, that's true.
And you did that piece on Masters of Illusion as well.
Right, yeah.
And France's Got Talent, I think.
Yes.
And then there was Le Plus Grand Cabaret du Monde, right?
So yeah.
Did I say that right? How was my French there? Was that okay?
That's it. Very good.
Okay. That's I tried. I can't mess up my French when I got Xavier on the line here. Is there anything that you've ever created by accident and it turned out to be absolutely amazing?
Yeah, everything.
Everything.
So, yes.
So literally everything is just this spontaneous accident. And you go,
Well, most of it, because if you think about it, you're never really right in what you say. You have a concept, you have an idea, but you never know where it goes. So you know there's something here, but it's always like the real part where you find the real strong thing. Like I remember for the Thai thing that I created, I had an idea, but everyone for so this is an interesting one. I wanted to build an act where I was playing with tape for Friends Got Talent, actually, and everything would turn like real. So I would put a piece of tape and it would turn into a flower, and then I would put a piece of tape, turn into a tie, and then my whole costume would become like, and I would make a Pierre Hart and a Kane. I would become Fred Astaire, which I'm a big fan of. And and one of these tricks was a tie. And I call a friend and say, hey, I've got an idea to make a Pierre tie. I put a piece of tape and I do this, and then the tie appears. And he's like, nah, it's never going to work. Say, you sure? Yeah, too complicated. And I try it. And the first time I try it, it actually works. And I'm like, wow. And I did it myself in my little room here.
Yeah.
And then this is when I go see someone who's professional and say, hey, I want the same, but you do it well. Right. And it worked. And I do this on Friends Got Talent. And, you know, it's end of the story. And I published the trick in a magazine in America. And like 5 years later, there's a guy named Adam Shayer, who's a guy who invented Siri, and he's a magician. He's a magician too, and he loves magic, and calls me and say, hey, I wanted to contact you because I'm using your trick with the tie. Every time I do a convention, a lecture for like tech billionaires and stuff.
Yeah.
And I open my lecture with your trick, and I'm in Vegas and I want to go see your show. And I'm like, what? Okay, so he invites me to dinner and we become friends, and I realize he's a magic aficionado and he loves magic. But he tells me about the tie and say, you know, I love that trick. I think it's such a great piece, and I do it to open my lectures every time all over the world. And he's been lecturer for everybody, you know. And I'm like, wow, that was actually a good trick. Maybe I should look into that. And I didn't know, you know, I didn't know it was a great idea. I had no idea. I just made up that thing and I published it. And I was like, yeah, sure, why not? And it took someone else to have another view. And this is where you could call the accident that happened, because even though I knew what I was doing, I had no idea of the strength of my idea. And yes. Since then, I'm opening all my TV appearances with the tie.
It looks, it looks so good. It really, there's a lot of things in your show that look so good, but the tie is, to me, it's like the ultimate attention getter, because it's just, how do I look? And everybody, you set the bar so low, right? And then when you just, everybody, it's just like, establishes you in charge, you are the pro, and it's like, whoa, we're in for a wild ride.
Yeah,
it's great. It's so good.
And I had no idea when I created that. And sometimes it takes a new someone with a new look to make you understand that that was a good trick, you know. And that's why when you say, oh, do you create by accident, or you know, there's 99% of the time I have no idea what I'm doing. We did the card and I failed four times, and the fifth time, I stayed and I flew, and I realized that's a good idea. You see what I mean? But the four times before that, I was like, I'm wasting my time. I'm wasting my money. So this is always an accident. You never know. And we're talking about the successes, but how many failure did I have, that things that I really believed in and they never went anywhere?
Well, that was actually a perfect segue into my next question, which it would be, what would be your biggest DIY, by DIY I mean something that you built or a concept that you had, what was the biggest fail of all time that you would say you've had?
There's so many.
Right.
I don't know. I tried to pull up a guitar from a box, and I built the whole box with a mirror and stuff, and never worked. I in Cirque du Soleil, I had this idea to go into a TV screen and get things we would have built a special TV that was tricked, and you wouldn't see my hand coming in. It was really magical. Never went anywhere. I mean, they spent time and money for that. And the director was like, yep, no, we just cut that from the show. You know, like so many things that you think are going to be great, and they end up being like, eh.
I'll remind you of one that you just glossed over for a second, but I think it's the most insane one that's happened that I've heard you tell. The jump rope on stage, what happened to you?
That's a little different. That's just me. I fell. So
I mean, that's pretty bad, isn't it?
Oh, that was super bad. I used to flip on stage, and I cut the flip because of we couldn't. It's complicated to say, but
it's too risky.
It's not too risky. The problem is that the theater I was working in was not allowing me to take an extra risk. So if I go to a bigger theater, I can add it back.
Okay.
But I was working on a jump rope thing, and then suddenly the guy makes something wrong with the rig, and I see it, and I'm like, that's going to be difficult tonight. But you know what? I don't know why I'm stubborn sometimes, and I say I'm going to do it anyways. And I did it, and I fell on my head, and I was knocked out, and the curtain closed. And people were thinking, oh, that's the end of the show. They didn't. They thought it was part of the show. And
he flies and then he dies, right?
Yeah, that's it. It's like, you know.
Wow.
And they thought it was the end of the show, and people leave. And I even had a review saying that the end of the show was weird or something.
It was like a weird ending.
Something like that. I was like, okay, great. Anyways, I go to the hospital and everything, and I decide to be careful when I fly now. But it's different. It's not a failure, as I've got an idea that I think is great. It's just like we're trying to perform that thing every night, and unfortunately, you have to review every single thing that you do every time. You have to be in charge.
Have to check like a checklist for everything, especially things that involve your physical body that you're relying.
Yeah,
on.
Yeah, that's the point. When you do a magic show or a show in general, you go in work in progress. You go with experience. You know, it's like, okay, tonight we saw the black bar that you shouldn't see, or the white thing that you just shouldn't see here. Mm-hmm. Next time, you guys are going to go more to the left, and you guys are going to go more to the right. And this is how we fix that. When you fly, you say, all right, so tonight the guy died because he just fell on the floor. So we're going to try to do better tomorrow night. you can't fail on that. You just have to make sure that your thing is perfect the first time. So it wasn't, and I was lucky that I didn't have worse. I was just knocked out, and I could do the show the next day. But I learned that you have to anticipate anything. You have to really learn deeply what you're talking about.
I agree 100%. We're on the final stretch here, Xavier. Now it's gonna get a little quicker. What inspired you to be a maker, to make your own stuff?
Well, there's one guy that inspired me a lot, is Buster Keaton.
Buster Keaton.
Buster Keaton was someone who was controlling. He was like controlling everything. He was on set and he knew exactly what he wanted. The story is that he got a camera and he took it apart and took it back. Which was in the 1920s, like the equivalent of doing that to an airplane right today, you know, something like that. It was a new technology that he was like working with. Anyways, Buster Keaton was someone who was very like pragmatic. He wanted things the right way. He made things. Chaplin was a little bit like that. Sometimes I remember hearing Chaplin doing. I remember there was a tree, something with a tree that was moving, and he was not happy with the actor's performance. He said, no one's going to see me in the tree, so I'm going to do it myself. And he redid the whole thing, and he would do like 500 takes, you know, like and this level of precision, this is what I'm looking for. This is, I have an idea and I will not hold off. And I know sometimes my crew, my team, they're like, come on, but I will not give up. And this is, I know it's a little bit of the question, but I think
it's all good.
It comes back to what you say, because being a maker is have a clear vision of what you want. You're precise. You're not just calling an illusion builder and say, hey, I wanna cut in half for tomorrow because I'm doing this show. You know, you're like, no, we're gonna do this way because this is how I envision it. And you have to make it. You have to. Even today, I'm finishing things. I'm making things because I want them a right way. And that's why I'm a maker. That's the only reason why. Now you're asking me if I'm welding or sewing things. I will not say that I'm doing, because I prefer people who know how to do that. But if someone is sewing the wrong way and I said, no, this was a triangle that I wanted here, I'm going to take the sewing machine at night and I'm going to finish it the right way, because this is exactly how I want it.
Right. No, you want to get it to the exact way. And sometimes you just got to get in there and do it yourself.
Yep. And that's why I was very inspired by, I studied a lot, like the work of Chaplin and Keaton. And I think these artists were like so precise with what they did. And I know it's not only them, but painters and actors. And there's so many people who are like in the shop. This is in the shop that you're doing your magic. This is here. This is what we do. You know, we're not just making phone calls.
Right. It's like ordering takeout versus cooking it yourself, because you know what you want.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah, that's a good analogy. And I don't know how well you know martial arts movies, but I'm a big fan of martial artists and martial arts in movies. And of course, the two most famous martial artists, if you think, top two, of course, Jet Li's up there as well. But I would say Jackie Chan and Bruce Lee.
Yeah.
They both have many, many stories like what you're sharing, in the sense that, well, Jackie Chan especially, he was big into the work of Buster Keaton, and that's why he did all of his own stunts.
Yeah.
Because he knew what it was going to look like. And plus, he was like one of the only stuntmen that was crazy enough to do that stuff.
Yes.
You know, sliding down a pole with all these glass light bulbs, and he was just, you know, sparks flying everywhere as he was sliding down in a mall. He was like on the third floor of a shopping mall, and what you saw is literally what he did. He jumped off the ledge and he grabbed the pole and he slid down, burning his hands all the way. I mean, it's just insane stuff. They just they knew what they wanted, and so they did it.
Yes.
Is there anybody that you look up to in the makerspace, like builders or inventors, that you are inspired from?
There's so many people and names, and in the magic world, there's really a lot of people that I look up to. Naming someone would be too small. I think sometimes I just see some guy on the internet and I'm like, wow, this is amazing. And we get in contact and I'm like, wow, your trick is really great. And I love what you do. And I discover someone who's got a genuine and crazy talent for creating and inventing new stuff. So there's so many people that I'm a big fan of. Of course, I'm going to name the big ones, and it's going to be not going to be accurate, because I'm inspired by a lot of people.
Right. And it's safe to say that we already established that you get inspiration from such a wide variety of types of art and people and disciplines.
Yes, of course.
So, yeah, I guess it would be hard to name just one. All right, what resources, if any, that you can think of, would you recommend to people out there that want to add a little more creativity into, whether it be their show or their life or their art, what they do in life? You know, some people have favorite books that they've read that they like to recommend. Some people have apps on their phone that help them do stuff. Is there anything along those lines? Reading material or technology?
Same thing. There's so much. I read books all the time. That's a big one. I read books, anything. It can't be just magic. Like, it's inspirational, it's a novel, reading books, watching movies, go to exhibitions. Like, what I think is, like, if you want to be creative, get to the creativity. If you want to be rich, hang out with rich people. If you want to be, if you want to be creative, hang out with, like, creative people. Hang out around creative centers. Like, you go to, I don't know, in Las Vegas, we have this new thing, it's named Mia Wolf, and it's amazing. It's like this creative, there's so many things, ideas. And when you go there, you touch creativity, you see ideas, you, And that changes your world because you're like, oh, you're influenced by it. And even if it's not going to influence you right now with this thing, it's going to make your brain work. And same thing with books and movies. And it would be too small to name one thing. I would say just like go for it as much as you can. Try to find creative things around you.
Okay. What I've summarized from everything that you've said basically is start with a vision or an end goal in mind, and then as you go live life, be open to all the possibilities and always be looking and pulling from these different places, like you said, where you go to watch a movie, or maybe you go out to get something to eat, and something there can just trigger inspiration for whatever you're currently working on.
Right? Yeah, and also I write down everything.
Okay.
I literally write down everything, no matter how stupid I think it is. I have a room at my in my place that is filled up with post-its, notes, and papers, and everywhere. And I know exactly where every idea is recorded. And sometimes I open a thing and I'm like, oh, that was a great idea. I'm going to do it. Because you stumble on something. So I write everything. I keep all those ideas somewhere.
No, that's
it's very important.
That's important. No ideas is too stupid, no matter how far-fetched at the time you think it is. It's an idea, right? And you don't know, your brain might not know how to piece it together at the time, but later, maybe even years later, you look at that and you go, wait a second. And then you can just, the puzzle starts to match up.
Yep, exactly.
Awesome. Cool, great. Well, Xavier, this has been very insightful. This has been an amazing journey that we've had here, learning about you, your creative mind, how it works, and some of your successes and failures. Although we wouldn't say that there are failures, they're just stepping stones that lead to the next success of Xavier Mortimer. We found out that you're crazy persistent, really, really have very high standards, and which shows in your work. And that's why I highly recommend everybody go see Xavier Mortimer's Magical Dream. When it opens back up, I saw it prior to the pandemic. I'm sure it'll be even better than before because you're always working on new stuff, always improving, as we've found out through our chat here. And before we go, Xavier Mortimer, where can we find out more about you and your show? Now's your chance. Let's do it.
XavierMortimer.com, at Xavier Mortimer, everywhere on social media. You can find me. It's very easy.
And the name of his live show is called?
Xavier Mortimer. It's Magical Dream. It's in Vegas, and we're going to reopen in July. So
stoked. But you are straining at the bit, I'm sure. Ready to roll. Well, thank you again. Thank you so much. Well, I hope you guys enjoyed that interview. It was inspiring, entertaining, and educational all at the same time. And if you haven't already, click that red subscribe button down below. You know what to do. Give this video a thumbs up, turn on those notifications, stay up to date when I release the next interview. Perhaps you're just listening to the sound of our voices on an app like Spotify, or remember, we can find us also on the Apple Podcast app, the Purple app, Google Podcast, and a host of other podcast platforms. You can listen to the show. Remember to leave us a review, 5 stars, I hope, if you've enjoyed and if you learned something in the podcast app. And hopefully we'll see you again on another episode of the Making Magic Podcast. I'm Sean Jay, your host, and we'll see you guys in the next one.